a state-run news service. What was it meant to be, and why is it gone? HIP 2.0, is it a Medicaid expansion? The governor's mom talks 2016, Glenda Ritz fights a power grab, and the plans for a new soccer stadium. That plus No Tie Thursday at the State House and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 30, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week's plans to create a state-run news service were revealed, and before the end of the week, they were terminated. In between, Governor Mike Pence faced criticism from around the country and from members of both political parties. Pence pulled the plug on Just In after 2 days of unsuccessful damage control by both him and his staff. They said that Just In was really meant as a clearinghouse for news releases, despite terminology in draft documents that suggested otherwise. The controversy distracted from a big win for the governor, federal approval of the Healthy Indiana Plan expansion. And the memo calling for termination was made public shortly after Democrats in the General Assembly attempted to block funding for it in the Indiana House. Here's Representative Matt Pierce, followed by Representative Scott Pelath.
All across state government, in every single agency of our bureaucracy, we're going to have people attempting to create their own news rather than just providing information, allowing a free and independent press to do it.
I think in this case, the best thing is simply to zero out funding for something that would endeavor to replace our free and independent media here at the State House.
How do you explain the aborted attempt to establish a state-run news service? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney was just in what the governor said, the target of an understandable misunderstanding.
Pence's Pravda problem is how I've heard it referred to. I don't think there was a misunderstanding. I don't think there was a misunderstanding. I think what they were doing is they had that echo chamber of the governor's office, and nobody bothered to talk to anybody outside about whether this was even a good idea.
Somebody did bother to leak it.
Well, you know what? And I think the House Democrats deserve a lot of credit for calling attention to it. I mean, they've already spent money, and they've already hired people, as I understand it, and they've got a 17-page memo about how to implement this thing. This isn't just a concept.
They hired one person who's actually been working on it for a number of weeks, maybe even months, and reassigned somebody else. Those people are now being reassigned.
I think the more interesting question is, if the governor said on the radio that he had no knowledge of this till he read about the story, okay, if that's the case, and I'm taking it at his word, he is completely disengaged from state government. He must be spending all his time talking about the presidency. If something this momentous, this isn't a question of whether you hire an extra investigator in an agency. This is a big story, and he didn't know about it?
Well, if it's tough for him to explain, isn't it?
Well, you know, one thing we have to recognize, I mean, Mike Pence has been a very strong supporter of the free press. He comes out of the sort of media sector himself. He was the first person in the House of Representatives to pass, author and pass, a media shield bill. I mean, he didn't intend for this to one, be whatever it is that's been depicted. I'm not even sure it really got a chance to be rolled out. It was leaked. I'm not sure anybody really intended this to be anything other than what a university has, which is a news office. I mean, you look at any higher educational institution of any size, and that's what they do.
That's what they call it. Right. That's the terminology they use.
With an editorial board and a
managing
editor?
But the truth is someplace in the middle. My point is that obviously he didn't want this to end up this way, and he didn't certainly know about it being depicted this way. And I think at the end of the day, he did the right thing, pulled the plug on it, and I think it makes all the world a difference in terms of kind of reinforcing kind of his view that, yes, this we're not in the business of a state-run press.
Did his staff serve him badly in this regard?
Well, absolutely. I mean, you saw the blow-up that happened. I don't think that a blow-up happens like this if he's being served well. They admitted that they made mistakes in the way they put this thing together. I don't think, I agree that the truth is someplace in the middle. The current system, if you go on the website and try to find the press releases for various state agencies, it is a mess.
An upgrade
is absolutely necessary, better, and it would be terrible if this all prevented something from being improved. Having said that, though, by using all of that journalistic language and by talking about giving themselves exclusives, which frankly doesn't make that doesn't even make sense. But the idea of giving themselves exclusives
They talked also about writing and compiling stories, sometimes feature stories that presumably might be used by newspapers, maybe smaller newspapers. Would newspapers publish some of those stories?
Well, it's hard to tell. The reaction that was quoted.
I'm going to say yes. It's possible.
We don't want to discount the ability of these newspapers to make judgments on editorial content, and I think that's a mistake that people have made. The publisher of the Portland newspaper was questioned by the AP about this, and he came out very strongly saying it was ludicrous to ever think that they would use something like this, and the attempt of doing this was ludicrous. But all of that said, this was poorly handled from the very get-go. The governor, when he gets taken to the woodshed by Greg Garrison and basically told, this is a terrible mess, what are you going to do about it, and fumbles around for an answer, is in a bad place. This got national and international attention.
He should have pulled the plug quicker.
Yes, he should have pulled the plug immediately, or he should have known about this and anticipated this, because I think Ann's right to an extent. There must be a bit of an echo chamber over there, because not a good vetting process in place. And when this thing came out, it blew up in their faces, and it ate up all of the rest of the news for that week.
It was not ready for prime time, and the governor obviously knew that. It was leaked. I'm not sure it was fully formed. It's unfortunate
It may or may or may not have been fully formed, but it was formed enough. The way it got leaked as far as I can tell, is that because it got sent out to all of the press people.
It was widely distributed in state government.
When you start widely distributing something, then, you better have it.
For launching.
It better be pretty close to being launched, because otherwise it should not be
sent
out to a
ton of people. The governor was not
well
served in this situation, and it reflects poorly on him, unfortunately, for the governor. And it did. It just ate up the rest of the news.
But he made a good decision to get out of it when he could. And I'm glad he did it.
He obviously made the only decision he could make is to get out of it. But the question is how something like this got as far along as it did without heads rolling. And that again speaks to the lack of management control.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, which one of these best describes just in? A, well-intentioned mistake. B, an understandable misunderstanding. C, monumental error. Or D, attempted overreach. Last week's question, who will be the Republican nominee for mayor of Indianapolis? 1% said Terry Michael, 71% said Chuck Brewer, 27% said Olgin Williams, and another 1% said Jocelyn Tandy Adonde. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. HIP 2.0, the expansion of the Healthy Indiana Plan, has the stamp of approval from the federal government following 7 months of negotiations. It's an expansion of Medicaid by another name. Governor Mike Pence made the announcement with a formal speech at St. Vincent Hospital, a big show to mark a huge development. It means health insurance for as many as 350,000 people who don't make enough money to qualify for Obamacare subsidies, yet too much to qualify for traditional Medicaid. What's important for the governor is that it includes health savings accounts and co-pays that he believes will lead to better health care choices. Here's the governor, followed by State Representative Ed Clear.
HIP 2.0 will require no new state spending and no new taxes.
It's successfully covered tens of thousands of Hoosiers, and now it's going to cover hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers. So, you know, I think one of the advantages was that it was a proven framework.
And I also believe it could possibly be a model for the nation in Medicaid reform. For you and for
your family. John Hammond, is that the governor's biggest accomplishment so far?
Well, you know, I think in many respects it is. And it might be one of the biggest accomplishments of state government in the last 10 years. And you have to recognize how this began. In a previous administration under Governor Daniels, that it was tried out, it was expanded in a sense that allowed us to think about this, ensuring another 350,000 people.
So yeah, it started out serving 40,000 people.
Right, and I guess what I would say is that if it endures, it might be bigger than anything we've done, either in the transportation realm or in the tax relief realm. When you're able to expand health care for that many people in this state, and it survives and endures, and it is a national reform. This is not an expansion of the same old Medicaid. It is something that obviously the feds were very reluctant to approve,
right,
but they did.
But they did, and they approved everything with one small change at the lowest level for co-payments. It's a dollar instead of $3.
Right, and it's going to cost more to collect than it is that they're going to realize. But having said that, John's right. This is a major accomplishment. This is something we've been calling for literally for years, because it takes a huge expansion of Medicaid, and it is doing something that Obamacare did not actually require them to do. So it's very good from that point of view, and we're going to cover 350,000 people without insurance. It's a wonderful idea. I don't care what he calls it, okay? It is an expansion of Medicaid, and I said that from the beginning. He can call it anything he wants as long as he expands it. The one wrinkle in this, though, it seems to me, is if he and Greg Zeller continue with that lawsuit and it's successful, the people getting subsidies up to around, I think, $80,000 are going to find some of this very difficult to be able to afford, and that will cut people off, and that's a bad thing.
Democrats say he's embracing Obamacare. He says he still wants to see Obamacare repealed. Is he having it both ways?
Yes.
Yes.
And that's okay, because it's the political realm. Look, he got it done, okay? Yeah. And he got it done on terms that he can live with. And I think that the important thing is that, as both John and Ann have said, is that more people will get coverage. And this is important to remember, Medicaid is the fastest growing segment of the state's budget.
Right.
Has been for a long time. This will help put the brakes on that sum.
This actually improves the state budget picture by $50
million.
$50 million,
yes.
And it helps it now, but it also stands to help it long term, and that's the important thing here, too.
$1.6 billion worth of health care that's coming to this state.
Oh, and that's what everybody's been talking about all this time. For months now, Indiana has not been participating. That money has not been coming here. But I do want to throw in, it's not just Mike Pence that's trying to have it both ways. I mean,
right.
The Obama administration and Democrats are trying to have it both ways, too. I mean, if it was just a Medicaid expansion, if it wasn't, if it's just Medicaid by another name, then why did the Obama administration take forever to
seven months.
Why did they discourage it and say that
more than that.
In the end, this is what we said it was at the beginning.
It's something that both Barack Obama and Mike Pence needed, and so they found a way to agree.
That's right. Mike Pence stood his ground in these negotiations. I've never seen him involved so personally, hands-on, in an effort that has such a big set of consequences for so many people. And he is really, you know, I've heard him say before, he says sometimes it's reasonable to be unreasonable. And I think he was stood his ground, and he got a lot of the things, everything he wanted.
He was able to say that this is Indiana 2.0. The problem with it is every time you put one of those wrinkles, the research shows that fewer people sign up. That's what's happened in other states that have done this. And that, from my point of view, is not desirable.
Moving on, mom always knows best, and Governor Mike Pence's mother says she thinks her son would make a good U.S. president, just not yet. 82-year-old Nancy Pence Fritch says she wants her son to, quote, be my governor for two terms. According to the Terre Haute Tribune Star, she thinks it would be wonderful if he ran for president after that. So what's the governor think?
I love my mom. I never take issue with anything she says.
There you go. John Katzenberger, is she giving up family secrets?
Well, I'm telling you, he had a week, didn't he? The governor had a week. I don't know. I have to say I was surprised that that news hit, and I do think that the governor handled the question very well. So good for him.
He didn't elaborate.
No, he didn't. Well, I mean, you're never going to say your mom is wrong. I mean, you can't do that.
Hopefully not.
There's nothing. There was no answer that was appropriate but the one he gave. But, the truth is, though, people are not talking about Mike Pence like they were for a while. I do think
it's
interesting.
Chris Christie and Scott Walker form political action committees.
But it is interesting that Mitt Romney now appears to be out of the race, right, and that does change the dynamic, I think.
Right. Do we learn anything from that?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with his mother either. I don't think anybody on this panel would want to do that. But, Barbara Bush said her son Jeb wouldn't be running either. And, that's a mother's love for her son. Yeah. And obviously, the governor's focused on Indiana at the moment. He's trying to figure this all out. We'll see what happens. Let life unfold.
Did she serve him well?
She's his mother. She can do whatever she wants. And he's wise to listen to her. And under those circumstances, he can run against Hillary Clinton when she runs for her reelection. So we'll see how that works out.
State School Superintendent Glenda Ritz tried unsuccessfully to stop a power grab this week. Current law says that the state superintendent automatically serves as chair of the State Board of Education. She showed up in person to challenge a plan to remove her when it came up in a House committee. She read a prepared statement and then walked out without taking questions, unusual behavior for any witness in a legislative committee. The bill permits the board to elect its own chairman, and the committee passed it on a party-line vote, 8 Republicans voting yes and 3 Democrats voting no. Here is the argument from Ritz.
This political power move of House Bill 1609 and other similar bills is unnecessary and will do nothing to resolve the real governance issues that this policy-making body must address.
We feel like the tensions in the board meetings have, for the most part, been manufactured by the governor's appointments, and that gives an excuse to remove the superintendent.
And that's Ritz aide John Barnes, who stayed to answer questions that would otherwise have gone to her. Leslie Weidenbender, can that bill be stopped?
I don't think so. No, I mean, the Republicans, as we've all talked about before, have huge majorities here. They believe in this. I don't see it stopping at all. There are actually two things going on right now. The Republicans are trying to remove her as chair of the state board, and they're also trying to give the State Board of Education significantly more power than it already has. I think both of these things have a very good chance of becoming law.
Is she being set up, as John Barnes said?
I don't know that she's being set up, but she certainly has the forces of the opposition focused on her. I think it's a little conspiratorial to think that it's a setup, but they certainly do want her out of that position and out of that power. And they've got the, as Leslie said, they've got the ability to do that.
Why wouldn't she answer questions?
You know, it's clear they've already made up their minds, and I think she is.
So then why show up?
Because she wanted to make her statement, and she's right. She's the elected education official. This board is appointed. I have a better idea. Rather than having the board elect the chair, why don't we abolish the board? Used to be that the board was there to assist the superintendent in creating policy. Policy is now being created in the governor's office and in the legislature. They're unnecessary. And if Mike Pence wants to really shrink government, he ought to cancel it like he canceled the other layer he put on not so long ago.
Go ahead.
Well, we ought to back up just a little bit and ask ourselves what the right policy should be. When I served Governor Bob Orr as his education policy advisor, we tried to pursue an elected, taking the elected superintendent, making it appointed, because everybody held the governor responsible for the quality of education
over time,
in Indiana.
Both Democrats and Republicans.
Well, we had bipartisan support for a bill that failed by 2 votes, and it's been tried off and on in various administrations. So, I know Superintendent Ritz, is a person, if you talk to her one-on-one, a likable person. I think she tried to keep the kind of the waters kind of calm. I think by staying, she might have had some questions there. But I think what the state board has done, they are the policymaking group. The chairman of the policymaking group should not be the CEO. The CEO is the implementer. And indeed, the Department of Education and the
chairman controls the agenda.
They're appointed. Nobody elected that education board.
They're appointed by the governor, who is elected.
What?
They're all accountable to the electorate through him.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how it works.
Tinkers to every chance.
It works in every other way. And in fact, we're one of the few states that even has this arrangement. So,
well, that's why we should abolish it.
In any organization, you would not have the CEO be the chairman. It's rarely
We should just have the Board of Education go.
It has nothing to do with Glenda. It has all to do with the right structure.
Well, no, I disagree with that.
Suddenly, with Glenda's arrival,
it becomes a huge issue. I mean, you can't pretend that this does not have anything
to do
with
it. Well, it's dysfunction.
A Democrat being in the office regardless of whether it's the right policy, right. And both parties
the cause of this dysfunction
have wanted it.
Quickly.
You have dysfunction in that organization. You have dysfunction within the whole system. You've got to find some way to stop it. And I think this is a good move in that direction.
And
I think what we're witnessing at the moment, maybe, though, is more dysfunction. Moving on, the Indy 11 unveiled plans for a new downtown soccer stadium this week. The club has proposed an 18,500-seat stadium that could host the club's 14 home matches and up to 30 other sporting dates throughout the year. It's an $82 million venue, which would make it the most expensive soccer stadium in the NASL. The team is proposing a 10% tax on tickets and a use tax on stadium revenue to fund it over a 30-year period. Here's Peter Wilt of the Indy 11.
Stadium is needed and appropriate regardless of what league Indy 11 plays at now or in the future. Its capacity does allow potentially for a team in Indianapolis to play in Major League Soccer.
And Delaney, will the legislature buy into that?
I think there's some interest. They've demonstrated they have a fan base. The question is, under what financial circumstances? I mean, I think that the soccer team would be less mobile than, say, the Pacers or the Colts might be. And so there ought to be, as the expression goes, more skin by the owners in the game rather than having this fully financed by taxpayer money and all the revenue going to the owners. So I think the devil is going to be in the details of the deal.
They've had one season. They're looking for a downtown site. They say there are three under consideration. They won't disclose which they are. I mean, is it early to be asking in the stage of this process? Is it early to be asking for the money?
I don't think so, because this is actually the third year of an effort to take a growing sport, international sport. It's a professional sport that we're trying to maintain here and stabilize. It's really a big part of it, just as the other professional venues are for us, a big part of the city and therefore the state's economic development initiatives. I think it has a big role to play potentially in the future of the city. So getting the details worked out, as Ann said, on the financing, it really is going to be the key. And
it certainly has a better chance.
There's a long way to go.
This is an interesting case, is it not, where all of the negotiation, for the most part, is taking place behind closed doors?
It is. I'm not sure that the Indy 11 certainly has proven that they've been popular among fans. They've had great attendance at their games. But I'm still not sure that those folks have done a very good job publicly selling the need for a stadium, the need for that kind of a stadium. I think they have a much bigger sales job to do before lawmakers are going to stick their necks out on it.
Do they get it done this year?
I think they'll go very far down the road this year, and they may get it done, but it's still a bit of a long shot because Leslie's right. They do have to get that public perception behind it. But the tax package that they've talked about is more reasonable than some others that we've seen, and the model, if they want to hew for a model, is the Indianapolis Indians model, where they do have skin in the game, the city helps, and it's a good program going forward. The end game's important here. You have to be pointing toward the Major Soccer League.
Finally, the dress code in the Indiana House of Representatives was relaxed on Thursday. It was a show of support for Representative David Wolkins. The Winona Lake Republican is recovering from cancer and unable to wear a necktie, so none of the men were required to wear ties, and most of them wore sneakers. Some of the women wore ties, and the governor showed up to cut off the necktie worn by House Speaker Brian Bosma. It was auctioned off for $525, almost $5,000. Take a look at this. There you go. Almost $5,000 was raised overall for the American Cancer Society, John Hammond. Does that help point out that the General Assembly is usually a little too stuffy.
Well, I don't think so. What it was a great day for those battling cancer and surviving it, and it was a really good feeling in that state house that day. In fact, I may just take my tie off right now.
You go right. Just don't mess up. Don't mess with the microphone.
Oh yeah.
It's nice to see him have a little fun.
Nice to see them have a little fun and to have it for a good cause and to support Representative Wilkins. There's nothing wrong with any of that. Except I'm not sure that if I were Brian Bosma with the length of those scissors that I would have felt.
I know
really
that was a little bit scary. I thought he
turned and used them on the parliamentarian. Matt Whetstone and cut off a brand new necktie. But
ooh.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican John Hammond, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible. We'll be right back.